Welcome to a very special We Are Libertarians. We're actually taking some time to interview today an active, a member of the active duty military. We're going to call him Goose because Galt apparently didn't think he was worthy enough to be called Maverick. So he's actually a friend of Creighton's. Creighton invited him in. Can you tell us a little bit about Goose?
Well,
that was scintillating. That was amazing. I put you on the spot. We've only been leading up to a question for 10 minutes.
Goose.
I was trying to make a joke. You know, I was trying to do some Top Gun reference, and I haven't seen it quick enough to know what
I mean. Okay. Goose has been a friend of mine since I was basically able to, you know, comprehend what a friend was. I've known him pretty much my entire life. He went out to the military right about after his first year in college. He's the same age as me. So he's been in there for how long now?
Almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years. Yeah. And, I mean, we brought him on because while he's an active military person, he considers himself a libertarian.
Would you say that a lot of active duty military would consider themselves libertarians?
Obviously, I can't speak for the whole military. I haven't seen the whole military. I've only been really two or three places. But I would say compared to maybe other groups, I'd say the military has a pretty high percentage of people who would consider themselves libertarians or at least Ron Paul supporters.
Why did you join the military?
I joined the military more or less for a job opportunity, to be completely honest.
Okay.
Did you go to that first year of college and realize this is not for me?
Pretty much.
Me too. Actually, one day I'll graduate.
I spent a lot of money and it was a waste.
Yeah. Did you call yourself a libertarian before or after you joined the military?
Before. I'd say about a year before I joined the military is when I started getting involved with politics and started figuring out where I was on the political spectrum.
Yeah, me, him, and a couple of our other friends went to the Tea Party rally back in, I don't know.
It was 08.
08, 07, 08. It was down at the White River State Park. So we went to that, and that was before he left for the military. I think he was still in college, right?
I think it was just after.
Are you sure? I don't remember. Either way.
I think it was that summer after.
Either way, it was before he actually left. So it was... It's been...
Time flies. The Tea Party's been around for a long time.
I know, really? I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
You feel old. So, and it's funny because there's certain things that you can and can't talk to active duty about. We don't want to get Goose in any kind of trouble, so we're not going to mention where he's stationed. We're not going to mention what branch of the service he's in. There are certain things you can and can't talk about. We're not going to ask you to talk about what you think of the Commander-in-Chief. We're not going to ask you to... disclose any sensitive information. And as Gold asked you, do you know any secret information?
There's sensitive information everywhere in the military. When you sign up for it, you basically sign up to keep it.
It's exactly what it's like
on
running
the DL.
It's exactly what it's like running the Libertarian Party. There's sensitive information everywhere, and so we're not going to ask you to second guess or disclose where you may be going. Let's get some basic questions just so they know a little bit more about you. So you're a libertarian. You're in the service. Have you been deployed overseas, or have you mostly served over the last 3 years in the States?
Stateside, mostly.
Okay.
And
can you talk about what you do on a daily basis, like what your job title may be, or is that too specific?
Oh, no. I'm an air traffic controller, just like any other air traffic controller outside of the military, just deal with different aircraft.
Okay. And so... do you expect to be deployed at some point?
Honestly, it's hard to tell at this point in my career field. A lot of our stuff is getting, you know, like, obviously it's no news to anyone else. Iraq just got shut down, basically, and everyone moved out of there. So
right.
Deployments are getting thinner, but you never know.
Okay. Galt?
Do you talk politics with your fellow airmen at all? Or does that usually stay out of the conversation?
I do. We always have our little debates because, you know, when a time of election rolls around, the military has to choose who they're going to vote for, just like anyone else. So, and it's funny because the rules kind of change for an election. Like, you know, when an election comes around, you know, you're allowed to start putting bumper stickers on your car and start advertising your political views.
Your personal, and it's, your personal car, not like the airplanes, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, my personal car.
Clarify there.
Getting a little bit of trouble if I put a bumper sticker for Ron Paul on the Obama-owned government car. But, you know, it's just like anywhere else. You know, we start talking about it and start trying to figure out where we're at.
Why do you think Ron Paul got so much support from the military and active duty servicemen?
Well, I can't speak for everyone else, but I can tell you why I support him, and it's because, you know, one of the things I signed up for is to defend the Constitution, and I think he's the only candidate out there right now that really even gives me an opportunity to do that. You know, I think he has the best interpretation of the Constitution, and he wants to get it back to the basics.
With the convention coming up next month, let's say Ron Paul doesn't get the nomination, which is most likely. Do you think that support from the military will transfer to Gary Johnson, or do you think they're more of a Republican-only type of support here?
Well, with news of Ron Paul endorsing Rick Astley, I think a lot of that support will... No, I think it'll be probably split 50-50. Some people will go to Gary Johnson. Some people will go to Mitt Romney.
Okay. And we want to make it clear, so he doesn't have to keep repeating it. He's here as an individual. He's not here representing the military. He's not here representing the opinions of other service members. He's just sort of telling us what he's seen and what his perceptions are. So just as an added disclaimer... To make Goose feel a little more comfortable.
I'm by no means an authority on anything here.
Well, good to know. What are you bringing in these people for then, if he's not an authority on anything? Come on now, Grant.
We're not authorities on anything.
That's true. We're not authorities on anything either. Can you go into, I mean, do you have a perception of Iraq? Are you able to look back at the Iraq War and make a determination as, I mean, do you have an opinion on it? You know, a personal opinion, was it a good decision to go to Iraq? I know that's a hotly contested issue, and you probably serve with people who served over in Iraq. Mm-hmm. You know, is that something that you're comfortable getting into?
I mean, you know, in the end, for me as a military member, whether I agree with the decision or I don't agree with the decision was made, and, like, basically that's what I have to get myself to, I don't know, to just go with any decision that is made, whether I think it's good or bad. In the military, that's what it's all about. You just have to, you have to live with it, and, you know, basically the reason I think, you know, you don't have people who desert when we're called to war that they don't agree with or whatever is basically because it's a brotherhood in the military, and when you're sent to war, you go to war with everyone, and you go there not just to fight a war that you think is just or unjust, but to, you know, protect your brothers and sisters in arms.
Now, so, let's ask sort of an ethical question, a hypothetical question. I mean, do you see in the future the case, you know, you took an oath to the Constitution. That's one of the reasons that you serve.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of things like Libya, I would personally consider Libya an unconstitutional war. If we went to Syria, I bet they would do it the same way. I mean, at what point do you think we'll start to see military personnel start to draw that line and say, I'm defending the Constitution, and start to become conscientious objectors to going to places like Libya? Do you think that that would happen, or do you feel that that brotherhood kind of overruns that?
And at one, before you start, caveat to that, what is the general perception on, like, the Oath Keepers, for those who aren't one, the general perception that the military that you've experienced has on those people who call themselves Oath Keepers?
And the Oath Keepers is an organization of police, fire, military members, people who serve and swear to the Constitution, to uphold the Constitution, and it's sort of an offspring of the Tea Party a little bit. And they are serious about defending the Constitution and saying, if we have to be conscientious objectors, we will be. We'll disobey orders that we think are unconstitutional. What is your opinion on that thought?
I mean, I think it's good. I think there do need to be some people out there, you know, saying, drawing a line somewhere. I really don't think that, you know, with like the Libya situation that you brought up, you know, if we're told to go, we're probably going to go. Just because that's kind of what the deal is, and there's pretty, you know, there can be harsh things for disobeyed orders, and whether in our view it's constitutional or unconstitutional, you know, it's not about what we see as being constitutional. It's about what our higher ups, the people giving us the orders, deem as being constitutional. That counts. So, you know, while we might think that our understanding of the Constitution is different or better, you know, that doesn't really matter to the military.
Right.
But in general, and maybe this is pushing too far, what is your general opinion on that, though? That it is only – it's a top-down approach, whereas, I mean, because if we just take this to the logical, absurd extreme, I mean, that just basically says whatever the top says they want to do. Well, it doesn't matter because that's how I interpret the Constitution.
Where's the line?
Yeah.
I guess.
Well,
is this even a thought that is discussed or really talked about? I mean, I imagine it's probably not – it's probably taboo to discuss, you know, what line are we going to start disobeying orders. Well, but
we never really talk about stuff like that. It's one of those things that you hope never has to happen, you know.
Sure.
You really hope that you're never told to do something that you have to question. And as far as the top-down approach, unfortunately, it's kind of necessary with the military, because if you let everyone interpret the Constitution their own way, you know, you could have all kinds of craziness, you know, all kinds of crazy views, and then you have a military that could become very divided on certain issues, and, you know, it's kind of hard to go to war on that, even if it is a constitutional war, and you really are going to defend your country. You could have those people that maybe, you know, just don't believe the same thing, and now you're going in there, and it's kind of a volatile situation. Yeah.
It's the difference between, you know, democracies are messy, you know, and Bush always said, well, hey, it'd be nice if this were a dictatorship, it'd be easier, you know. And so in the military, Bush defenders, in the military, I would imagine, there's probably, you know, less, it's tougher to have, you can't have a democracy, a democratic military, I guess. You got to have that discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm not defending his intelligence.
And it's up to the citizens of the United States to elect people who believe in the Constitution and uphold the Constitution. So our civilians, and by default our commander-in-chief, are the ones that make constitutional decisions, because it's unfair to put soldiers in a position of becoming conscientious objectors and putting themselves in Leavenworth for many, 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 many years, maybe forever. And, you know, it's easy, I guess, for some libertarians to get mad at a member of the military or of a police force, when really a lot of us should look at ourselves and say, well, who the heck are we electing? As opposed to getting mad at these service members. Let's take a look at ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, I know many libertarians recently who, or with the recent passing of NDAA, think that that's a suspension of habeas corpus in the Constitution. When that passed, did you guys have thoughts or conversations on that, or what do you think about NDAA if it came to a military policing of
the United States,
our country? Do you think that would bring up those objections or start those objections?
I think it would bring up some serious questions everywhere throughout the military, through, you know, the lower rankings, all the way up through, you know, your upper management positions.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would be forced to question that, just because, you know, that's what the Constitution was written for, to prevent something like a military state. And
it's in the Bill of Rights.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that kind of segues into another question pretty well. One of the things that a populace would have to fear as far as an overreaching government is the arm that would enforce it, with that being the military.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like at this point the military is not just some sort of autonomous, you know, mass that is going to just blindly follow some crazy, you know, policy. I mean, NDA is a good example, but I mean, just in general, should the higher ups, should the, maybe even the president, say, you know, we're going to, you know, turn our.
Yeah, to expand on that, I mean, a lot of libertarian thought is that things are about to get really bad and the government's about to get way more tyrannical and, you know, we should fight the police and we should fight the military. And
yeah, and I'm not necessarily saying fight that. I'm just saying, do you think that there's a general opinion that you've witnessed that says that these most military people are like average Joes in the sense that if you wouldn't support an over tyrannical government, neither do we.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the American military has never been the type to just, you know, basically we're not the North Korean military, you know, mm-hmm. where they're forced to serve and they serve out of fear, you know. The American military has never been like that. We're a volunteer military, and that's one of the reasons why we're the best in the world is because, you know, we are educated and we know what we're doing and we're well-trained. And I think if it came down to the government trying to do something as unconstitutional as making a military police state, I would think a lot of people would have some serious questions and have real issues with actually trying to implement that.
Serious question. At boot camp, did Arlie Ermey yell at your face?
What's your major malfunction, scumbag?
Not Ermey, but someone a lot like him.
How difficult was basic training? We'll move on from sort of the conscientious objector territory and into some of the basic training. I mean, I know that's one reason my fat behind never wanted to get into the military because – and hey, I turned 18 on September 9th, 2001. I turned in my selective service card on September 10th, 2001, and then September 11th happened, and I was like, oh, thank God, I'm 4F. I don't want to get drafted. I don't want to go. And, you know, I just looked at it and was like, I don't want to go to basic training. They'll yell at me, and I'll have to crawl in sand. It seems okay after that.
Gosh,
but
you're a girl.
Yeah. You didn't want to get up to be here at 11 o'clock. What are you talking about? So how hard is basic training?
It's a very, very rigorous training. You get there, and immediately from there on out, it's just, you know, it's all about breaking you down and building you back up. You know, you gotta get past some certain mental blocks, and you gotta basically realize your potential, or else you're not gonna make it through.
Do they wake you up to the trumpets every morning?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Creighton forgets that we're on radio and you have to talk into the mic. I mean, do you get to sleep? Or, like, I mean, do you get to watch TV? I mean, what is this?
Oh, no. No TV, no cell phones, nothing. You know,
how do you check Facebook?
We sleep, obviously. No, it was rough.
I remember.
Can you get on Reddit?
I remember I had to write him, like, actual paper letters.
What?
Yeah.
What kind of sorcery is this?
I had to give him updates on, like, my dog died and all this kind of stuff.
Like, and he's reading this, like,
Creighton doesn't have the best handwriting.
Who the hell cares?
I typed it. Douche. But, no, yeah, they're still at that point where you say you have to send them paper.
Yeah. Reflecting back on basic training, what do you feel the purpose of that kind of strenuousness is? I mean, what is the purpose of that rigorous activity?
You know, everyone that joins the military signs up to be a warfighter, basically, you mm-hmm. know, and if it comes down to it, you have to pick up the gun and go do it. You have to be prepared to do that. And that's basically what basic training trains you for.
So is it more the physical aspect or is it more the mental aspect of understanding that you're part of a team and that you're part of an organization that's top down and not bottom up?
It's more the mental aspect.
Is it?
It's just getting you to realize that, you know, how the military works and why it needs to work that way. And, you know, that's...
I've often found that, you know, maybe we are libertarians need a little bit more of that discipline where I need to yell at Creighton and Chris a little bit more. And
You need to yell.
We need to get more strict.
He messes with me about being here at 11, but I was here at 11.
I was here at 11, too. I just couldn't find a place to park.
All right.
So
if you're on time, you're late.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever been in trouble? What are some of the punishments if you're late, or if you what are some of the things? Have you ever been punished in the military?
No, not really. It's just, you know, most of the it's kind of hard to say. Like, we have a paperwork system basically to document everything, just like any other job would. I'm sure, you know, if you do something wrong, if you show up late at any job, you're going to get written up or something. Something's going to go in basically in your personal record saying that
you don't
did
get
this.
Like 400 push-ups or any of that kind of stuff. Or
they don't make you scrub the barracks with a toothbrush while talking about shrimp.
Oh, no. No, typically not. I guess that happens kind of when you're going through training. But
I'm shocked to find out that the military is not like stripes. This just blows my whole notion of what the military is and isn't. So, I mean, John Candy wasn't there. So, after training, I mean, so you settle into a job. Do you get a home base that after training, you know? Because I imagine whatever branch of service you're in, you know, for the Marines, for instance, you're either in San Diego or you're at Paris Island, and then after that, you probably settle into a base that you're assigned to, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then you start working and training and doing your job, and maybe you go to school for that job.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, how do you get to a point where you're just sort of on autopilot, where you wake up every day and this is your job?
With the military, I don't think you ever hit that point. It's like you wake up and every day there's something new, you know, some new problem or some new, you know, basically, you know, we're always on our toes for something to happen. You know, there's always that time where you could be called up for some kind of craziness that you have to go in and work for.
What would you say is the worst aspect of being in the military? I mean, whether it's the creature comforts, whether it's the just not having sort of the, and I don't know if you have the freedom to go to Target at 10:30 at night, or, you know, what is the worst part of being active duty?
I wouldn't say there's a worse part. There are things sometimes that are very inconvenient, but
like,
you know, that's kind of what we signed up for. Like, you know, you can be called in at any point in time to come in and do your job. They're called, you know, you have recalls where you know, you're expected to be ready.
Sure.
24/7, and I guess that would be the most.
Probably never that sense of relaxation where you get to just relax and turn off your phone and just do nothing on a Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, you always, if there's work to be done, you're going to do it, whether it's your day off or not.
What would you say the best part is? I mean, what's your favorite part of being active duty?
Well, just the military is, you know, a great experience. It's, it gives you great training. There are awesome people in the military, you know. I made some really great friends where I've been stationed, and you know, you get to meet people from everywhere, and you know, see a lot of things you might not have seen had you not joined the service. So,
what's the weirdest situation that you just, after it happened, you just were like, "What the F was happening there?" I mean, has there been a situation where it's like it's unique to the military, and you're just like, people would not understand this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of situations like that are unique to the military and kind of just funny to just military personnel or even, you know, air traffic controllers. You know, we have a lot of stuff happen every day where you're just kind of like, it just, yeah.
Now,
that happens here too.
Yeah, you're in the air traffic control game, and we'll say you're in the Southwest area. Do you ever see aliens on your radar? What do you believe about aliens? Can you talk about that?
Have you ever met David Duchovny and Julian Anderson?
What is your personal opinion?
They're frequent visitors.
We have coffee all the time, man.
So, yeah. Seriously, do you think there are aliens?
You know, it's hard to tell.
It's classified, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm asking.
It's one of those things where, you know, I've seen a UFO before, but, you know, UFOs.
Have you ever been probed?
Not while I was working or anything. Okay. This was before.
We're jumping the shark a little bit on this.
Hey,
the dude just said he saw a UFO.
The universe is pretty big, Creighton. You can't prove.
In the military, you're more likely to be probed by the doctor than you are an alien. You got those class one physicals.
Let's ask about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Moving into a natural segue. What was your...
What?
Oh, no.
Come on, man. That was just awful.
Yeah, that took you guys long enough. What was your reaction to Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
You know, to me, it doesn't matter. Like, it just went, you know, whatever. I don't really care about that. I think there's some obvious issues that need to be brought up, though. I think when they repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I don't think it took care of all the issues. I think there's still some comfort issues that they're going to need to take care of as far as living conditions and, you know, showering and stuff like that. I think some people might be generally, you know, just uncomfortable with certain situations that you may put them in. So I think there's some things that need to be addressed. But overall, repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I don't think it was a huge mistake or anything.
But, I mean, here's the thing. If you try to segregate that out, I can understand the comfort thing, but once you segregate that out, don't you segregate that person out? And, you know, the military is a lot of it is about camaraderie.
I'm not saying, like, have a community shower and then set up a separate shower time for, you know, the individual. You know, I'm saying, like, maybe we just start looking at other situations like, hey, how about we just have private showers instead of community showers?
Right. Yeah, okay. Which I think pretty much everybody would be in favor. Yeah. Hand the mic to – what did you say, Creighton?
Yeah, no, milk this public discussion so for all it's worth and get a private shower. Man, I like how you think.
Man, you got to do what you can.
I've talked to a lot of guys. I have talked to one guy who served in the Navy on a submarine. And, I mean, these guys were on a submarine for months at a time together. And they were like, we knew that we had gay crewmates. We just didn't care. It's not like they came up and they were, you know, perverts or anything. They're just like me and you, and they serve admirably. And, you know, we just never told anybody because we didn't want them to get in trouble because they're our brothers.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, most of the people that'll speak out and say they have a problem against it, first of all, aren't even in the military. Hmm. And second of all,
shocking.
You know, they've never even worked with, you know, a gay individual or anything like that. It's one of those things, like, they just don't know. They're still people. It's not like they're, like,
right,
some alien, like, that's going to...
Yeah. Probe you. Yeah. I think
Fred Phelps might hate our podcast now.
Well, I'm sure Fred Phelps had issues with us long before this podcast. So really, the entire reaction in the active duty rosters to DADT was probably meh.
Yeah, it really didn't matter. We were just like, oh, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was appealed today. Move on with life.
Do you think there was more of a general, like, upsetness with it as it existed?
It really was, like, so little impact to us.
It's probably one of those things.
It's one of those things. I'm sure it mattered to the people that were in the military and were homosexual, but, like, generally, it was very little impact.
What are some of the other things that are greatly politicized in the political arena, but for the active duty military member, you just don't really care. It doesn't affect you. But, you know, everybody wants to talk to you about it or get your opinion on it because it's a hot topic in politics. What are some of the other things besides DADT?
Well, as an air traffic controller, you get the whole, you know, we give tours a lot in our facility or whatever. So, you know, you get people come through the first question. Do you sleep at night?
My friend, like, Matt is an air traffic controller, and he gets that all the time. And it's funny, but it's their own fault because if you go into the tower, they have, like, do you have this too, where it's like Barca loungers and couches and beds where you can take a nap, and it's like flat screen TVs to take a break? I mean, because they don't want those guys to get stressed out. They don't want them to get too tired.
Well, that sounds like civilian control, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's
what
we don't have those
amenities. Let me translate for listeners. Yeah, your friend sounds like a lazy bastard.
We don't have those amenities, but
what are some other things that are politicized besides,
you know,
that?
What's funny is just like when they ask that question, I'm just like, you know, first of all, if I did sleep in the tower, I wouldn't tell you and die myself out. So it's just a dumb question.
Right.
But, well,
What are some other things that are politicized that, you know, is talked about on Fox News or CNN, but it, you know, it doesn't affect you at all, or you know, active duty military members just don't really care?
You know, off the top of my head, I can't really think of a whole lot. You know, people only want to go with what's interesting at the time, and 90% of the time what's interesting really doesn't affect anyone. It's just some sort of political ploy to get everyone's attention off of something else.
Oddly enough, that applies to my job too, working in politics. You look at that and go, yeah, I don't know why you're calling me about that. That doesn't really matter. Why don't you go canvass a neighborhood?
Yeah, so. exactly.
But, okay, in general, do they allow you to act like college people? I mean, I have this perception of the military is it's like you got to get up at the crack of dawn, go to bed.
Right.
When the sun goes down, you don't really get any off time to just basically do what I did in college and just like...
Oh, but if that were true, then how could you get in, like, in Law and Order? I see it all the time where they get into drunken bar fights. Like, how would you have time to get into the drunken bar fights? I mean, I've had a lot of friends who went and served because just of, you know, I'm 8 years older than all you guys, and so it was right after 9/11.
He's father time over here.
And so, you know, I had a lot of friends go and serve, and to me, their lives after basic and after their training, once they kind of settled in, it was like going to work every day. You know, they still had to get up early, but they had that, you know, that same discipline, and their work was more structured, but really they went to work every day, and then they came home and they got to watch TV or, you know, talk online or go out to eat with friends, and there was free time. It's not like, you know, is that still the case, or is that, you know, just a bad perception on my part?
Oh, no, there's definitely still a lot of free time. You know, if anyone worked constantly and didn't have any kind of wind down time, they'd go crazy. But, yeah, there's still definitely free time. Obviously, our schedule is a little more stiff than maybe some other places. Just because, you know, we have things to get done. We have to constantly be ready. You know, that's the thing about the military is there's never really a down moment because you're just spending all your time being prepared.
Right.
Yeah, there's that weight hanging over your head that at the drop of a pin, you got to be, you know, in gear and go.
And that can be a lot of pressure. I mean, if you always have that over you, I mean, man, there's nothing better than on a Sunday turning off your phone and just not giving a crap, you know? Like, you know, if you don't get that every once in a while, then, you know.
Okay, so one thing that I've always thought was interesting is, like, you've seen The Hurt Locker, correct?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So one of the topics that was they brought up in that was how at the end he kind of became conditioned towards, you know, he couldn't really exist as he wanted to in normal life, and he just was always going back and back and back. Do you see that often? Do you feel like, one, do you feel like that happens to you at all? And two, do you think you know people where that's the kind of thing where it's like they can't really, it's like they've become, the military has turned them into somebody who just wants to be in the military all the time. And they can't really, you know, act in normal civilian life.
I mean, I think there's people like that out there. I haven't run into anyone like that specifically. But I think it is a strong possibility there's people like that out there because you see all these people come back with PTSD and stuff like that. And it really can. I'm sure if you're deployed a lot and you get used to that lifestyle, a constant adrenaline rush, basically, I'm sure it would mess you up a little bit. And, you know.
So have you seen over the last 3 years, because it's really over the last, you know, 2 to 3 years that we've started to really see the effects, and society is starting to make a bigger effort to, you know, taking care of soldiers' mental health and making sure that they're employed when they get back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you started to notice over the 3 years that you've been active the military taking better steps to prevent, you know, mental health issues?
Oh, the military has always been taking steps to prevent these things. You know, you have a you know, before and after a deployment, you see a mental health doctor, and, you know, it's just to make sure that...
His name's not George S. Patton, is it?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good. We've gone a long way from when Patton slapped a guy for having shell shock.
Yeah. you know,
again,
before.
All of our knowledge of the military, by the way, is based on movies. So, so let me tell you. Patton.
What was it like on the Battle of the Bulge, man? What was that like?
Right. So, was it cold? I don't really know much about the Korean War because I haven't made any movies about it. So,
well,
yeah,
there's this one guy I was stationed with that just wouldn't stop talking about different kinds of shrimp he could cook. I just didn't get it.
So, I see an impending war with Iran coming up pretty soon. If we have a full-fledged war like that, and let's say Congress declares a draft, how
do you really want to serve with the three of us?
I was just going to say, how do you feel about drafts, and do you think that would affect, because you said, like you said, our military is the best in the world because it's voluntary. Do you think that would affect, just how we operate as a military, okay, or just, just take it.
No, this is like the sloppiest interview of all time. I swear to God.
And then I'm going to add something to it.
Right.
I don't even know what I was going to say now.
Was asking about Iran and drafts, and I was going to ask, do you think that Iran will cause a draft rather than just assume that there will be one because of Iran?
Right. That they might stretch the reserves, add more tours, add more deployments.
Because we deployed Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, I mean, all this kind of stuff, and we don't have a draft yet. So
Iran's a lot bigger.
Well, I mean, Iran's bigger than Afghanistan and Iraq combined.
Sure.
I can't really comment on, you know, what the higher-ups are going to decide to do if something like that were to happen. I can say that I think if we had a draft and we had a lot of people basically forced to join, I think everyone knows it's kind of in the best interest to keep the military as volunteer only as possible, because it works out better that way. People end up in the right career fields more often, and they end up doing what their abilities allow them to do, as opposed to, you know, hey, you're being drafted and this is what you're going to do.
Literally, right. My only skill is talking. And I'm not even good at that. So
hey, you seen a Good Morning Vietnam?
Yeah, that's a good point. Good Morning Vietnam. That was the Rolling Stones of Gimme Shelter.
Have you ever been on a boat through Cambodia?
You guys. There was a soldier who dressed in uniform at a Ron Paul rally and was tagged for it. I mean, what are your opinions on that situation?
Soldier had to have known the regulation. You know?
Right.
The regulation says very specifically.
Heck, we know the regulation.
You cannot get dressed in uniform and go talk to a reporter at a Ron Paul rally.
Right.
It's just forbidden. And he spoke in front of all the people at the rally. And just not a good situation you want to put yourself in. Because, you know, people get the perception that you're speaking for the military.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't speaking for the military. He was speaking for himself.
And kind of a similar situation. We were at the International Students for Liberty Conference back in, what was that, February?
Yeah.
There's was he active duty, that guy, or was he... I don't know. There was a military person. I don't know whether he was active or not, who served a tour in, I think it was Iraq. And he asked John Stossel, or actually asked John Bolton a question. And it got a lot of, you know, it was on the Stossel show. It got a lot of, like, you know, applause. And it was kind of like the very, very to the heart of what a lot of libertarians, or Ron Paul style libertarians, kind of see with the whole idea of blowback. And he basically said, from his perspective, he saw exactly what is described as blowback, where actions abroad cause a lot of these other the enemy, quote, to, you know, look at us with resentment.
He talked about their children.
He said there was a kid walking with an AK-47 down the street or something, and Is that something you're allowed to talk about? Like, what is your idea on the legitimacy of the blowback argument? Is that...
I mean, you just... You look at history for that one. I've never experienced it firsthand, so I can't really comment on it, you know, from firsthand experience. But I mean, you look at history, you look at, you know, helping out Osama bin Laden, you saw how that ended up. You look at putting Saddam Hussein in power, you saw how that ended up. So I think, you know, I had the same information as any other civilian as far as that goes. Really don't have that deployment experience to really even comment on it.
And that that question on the Stossel show ended, and it was aired on the actual show, and he edited in clapping after the question. It was great.
Nice.
And Stossel did a good job of defending himself. He didn't totally edit it. He just deleted it. Anyway, we weren't clapping at John Bolton's answer, and that's what it made it sound like
right.
in this show.
So, on another very serious, and I know you can't talk about, you know, future issues, you can't talk about classified information, but maybe if you could give us a hint.
What is Area 51?
What are the Canadians up to?
The Canadians?
You are aware that 98% of Canadians live on the American border.
Uh-huh.
And you've seen Canadian bacon.
Yes.
It's amazing.
They're the greatest threat to liberty. They've come in. They've taken over our shows like Michael J. Fox, Alan Thicke.
Bacon.
They ruined bacon.
They ruined bacon. Damn.
Are we making preparations for the enemy to the north?
You know, all I can say is I hope so.
All right, good. Good. That's what I like to hear.
Are you serious right now?
One day we're
freaking Canadian crap. Oh my god!
One day we're actually going to have a Canadian listener.
Oh man!
And that's going to be great.
The sad thing is, Creighton asked that because Chris Spangle looked serious. It's like, are you serious? You're serious?
Oh man.
Well, we're kind of getting to that point, I think. What does have any wrap up questions?
listen, bro. We're totally out of gas, and let's end this as quickly and as swiftly as possible. As quickly and swiftly as you could probably end Galt's life. Look at those arms, man. Put you in a sleeper hold in about 4.2 seconds. I said, look at his arms, and then Galt looks at his arms. Like, my biceps are just as big. I'm like, no, they're not.
All right. Are we done messing with me?
We really. Can you take him with you? You really need to get him disciplined. All right. Well, Goose, thanks for joining us here on the podcast. We appreciate you coming in, and we will do the best to put this out there so you won't be exposed. Not because you might get court-martialed, but because you might be associated with this program. We greatly apologize for that.
Keep fighting for liberty. Keep talking to people about it.
I've got a question for you because, you know, he was about to go someplace, and I've always wanted to ask an active duty military member this, and I imagine that it probably varies. You know, we have made a concerted effort as a society to make sure that we thank people who serve. And a lot of that is a blowback from the way that we treated Vietnam vets, which was extremely poorly. And I hope that we do a good job of treating active duty Iraqi and Afghani vets far better. Do you appreciate when people come up and tell you and thank you for your service, or does it get old after a while and you just want to eat your lunch?
I mean, I appreciate it. It's never gotten to the point to where it like interrupts my life.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's nice to hear every once in a while, and, you know, just kind of, I don't know.
And what is your reaction to the people who are hostile and, like, just talk crap about the military and say, you know, oh, well, they're just in it for a job. They're like welfare queens. I mean, do you kind of take that stuff personally, or do you look at that and go, whatever?
They don't really know what they're talking about.
Right.
I mean, Flags of Our Fathers...
Again.
movies. Again.
There we go.
But either way, the one of the topics that they were trying that I think it was Clint Eastwood actually that directed that was trying to talk about was how the ones that come back and got remembered, the ones that they specifically raised the flag at Iwo Jima, but the ones that got remembered are the ones that lived, and they hated that because they thought the real heroes were the ones that died. Do you feel like that's like a general idea in the military that you've experienced where it's like the people who come back, they appreciate what's being you know, all the praise that's been put on them, but it's really the ones that are out there and they have given their lives that are really the ones that are the heroes.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you look at these Medal of Honor recipients and stuff like that, and most of the time you see a Medal of Honor recipient, you're going to see in the action that he performed to get that medal. A lot of people around him died, probably good friends. So, you know, there's always that feeling to where, yeah, you're happy that you're getting the recognition, you're happy that people appreciate you, but at the same time, there's that, you know.
Yeah, you lost something.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, to lighten it up a little bit, have you gotten a Rupert for Governor shirt yet?
I haven't. I have not.
Well, we'll make sure. Make sure you wear it on base.
They'll be like, what?
Who is Rupert?
I saw that episode.
I'll tell you, we drove...
this short-haired hippie doing here?
We drove the RV through the Southwest to Las Vegas for the national convention, and at every stop we made to get gas, he was recognized, and people were all about Rupert. They love him. So, okay. I mean, it's pretty amazing. My aunt just called, and she's from North Carolina, and she's like, I've been following the Rupert for Governor campaign. I wish I still lived in Indiana so I could vote for him. He's amazing. So please wear it. You know, maybe we could get some Hoosier absentee votes. All right, man. Well, thanks for joining us, Goose, and you be safe, and thank you for serving.
And this week's episode was brought to you by something cool, Pez.
Hey, you guys. All right. Thanks for listening. Gulp. You had the pre-prepared questions.
Everyone's supposed to have pre-prepared questions because you were supposed to send them to him before we came here. Anyway.
Do you have questions? I'm just waiting for you. I just want to make sure that you... There's.
Oh, I'll get all my questions in. All right, are we ready?
Yeah. This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.